Parshav Kiseitse, packed full of mitzvahs. I believe it has the most mitzvahs for any single parsha in the entire Torah. And therefore, of course, if we were to discuss the halachic content of Parshas Kiseitse, we would be here until further notice. Within the context of the Chumash here, there is no avoiding the mitzvahs of the parsha, but we would like to perhaps lay emphasis on the way that the Torah communicates some of the mitzvahs in order to glean further insight. And I would like to take a classic example by directing our attention to the very beginning of Perek Kaf Beis. Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Aleph, which discusses the mitzvah of returning lost objects, commonly known in English as Hashavas Aveda, and it is not the first time in the Torah that it has been mentioned. Of course, it's in Parshas Mishpatim as well, but Mishneh Torah will give us further details, and let us consult the Psukim. Pasuk Aleph, Lo tira es shorachicha o es sayoni dachim. Do not look upon the ox of your brother or his sheep, nidachim, wandering around, v'salamta mehem, don't just ignore it. Hashev teshivem la'achicha. Give it back. Hashav asaveda. V'im lo karov achicha elecha v'lo yidato. What if he's not nearby or you don't know who he is? You're not sure who lost the object. V'asavto atoch beisecha. So bring the object in to your house. V'ayayim acha adarosh achicha oso. And keep it with you until your brother comes to seek it out, or according to the Gemara, until you check out the person who claims to be the owner, vashibosalo, and give it back. V'chein taseh l'chamoro, Apostle Gimel, similarly to his donkey, v'chein taseh l'simloso, his clothing, anything that he could lose. V'chein taseh l'chol aveda sachicha shetovad mimenu umetzasa, lo tuchal eshalem, do not ignore it. And the Talmud, as we know, discusses why these specific items are mentioned, the donkey and the garment. What does each one add to our understanding or crystallization of the halachas of Hashavas Aveda? What I would like to do, through the medium of the Alshich HaKadosh, is to take a second look at the way the Torah has presented the mitzvahs, or the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Let's go back to the beginning and take nothing for granted. Pasuk Aleph. Lo tire es shor achicha o esayoni dachim v'hisalamta mehem. We translate literally, do not see them and ignore them. Don't see it and ignore it. There is room to claim that there's something of a redundancy here, for a very simple reason. You cannot ignore something unless you've seen it. If you haven't seen it, then that's not called ignoring it. Ignoring it means you know that it's there, you've seen it, and you choose to ignore it. And if that's true, then one could say that the Pasuk has presented in an overly wordy way what it could have said in a much more linear fashion. Lo tisalem, do not ignore it. But rather it said, don't see it and ignore it. But every act of ignoring presupposes the fact that you've seen it, and therefore the whole lo tire is redundant. That's an interesting question. And in fact, the Alshich was not the first person to discuss this. The Halacha, the Gemara in Eilu Metzias, yields a fascinating practical ruling based on this. Namely, the fact that the Torah says v'hisalamta, which if you took it in abstract, says, and you will ignore it, tells us that sometimes you are allowed to ignore it. Sometimes you can ignore a lost object. Pa'amim sha'atam is alein. Now what would be an example of being able to ignore a lost object? Says the Talmud, it considers a number of possibilities, but ultimately it zones in on the case of zokein ve'eino lefichvodo. That means that the person is elderly or respectable, and this is beneath his dignity to go for the lost object. And what does that mean? If, for example, it's a sheep, he's wallowing around in the mud, and this person, he's the rabbi or any other dignitary, and if he starts getting involved and trying to outrun the sheep, by the time he's finished, they're both going to look identical to each other. And moreover, and this in a sense is the metric here, if it was his own animal, he wouldn't go after it. And therefore, the Torah gives due to consideration to that, to his person's covet. It's also a factor. Zokin ve'en lefichvodo. And that is learned from the unusual usage of the positive form. Ve'esalamta. Of course, in context, generally, don't ignore it. But the way the Torah phrased it, ve'esalamta means pe'amim sha'atom is alim. Sometimes you can ignore it. And that is evidence of the fact that the Torah has written this in a somewhat unusual way. Let's keep going. The end of Pasuk Aleph. Hashev teshiveim la'achicha. Whenever we see these double expressions, Hashev teshiveim, we have to be on guard. Because if we take the easy route and translate the double expression, as is the custom, you shall surely return it, we have done a disservice to Lashon HaKodesh, because the Torah is always sure as to what you should do. It doesn't need to say it twice in order for you to be sure. My Irish lineage makes me rather more thick-skinned when it comes to these expressions, because they say to be sure anyway. It doesn't really add much. But the Torah is always sure. When the Torah says, Zochor Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho, remember Shabbos, it didn't say Zochor Tizkor. But we understand the Torah is quite sure that you need to remember Shabbos. And it's quite sure about everything it tells you to do. And therefore, surely, the double expression does not just mean surely. And if that's the case, then what does it mean? Once again, the Gemara darshans, Hashiv Teshivim, there are halachas that are learnt. Even if you gave it back and it went missing again, you have to give it back again. Afilu mea pa'omim. One may have thought there's a statute of limitations. Three times, and then that's it. No. So there are halachas learned from the double form. And the final anomaly, and all of this is just reading the words as carefully as we can. The end of Pasuk Gimel, which reiterates, says, Lo tuchal lehisalem, you're not allowed to ignore it. Once again, the Torah has used a rather specific phraseology. Lo tuchal lehisalem, you... Literally, you are not able to ignore it. Well, that's not necessarily true. We understand that what it means to say is, well, you're not allowed to ignore it. Why not? Because the Torah said, you can't. Well, then, the main point, therefore, is just to forbid it, and then you can't do it. Because that's what it means anyway. And that's generally how the Torah tells you these things. In the Aseres Hadibros, the Torah says, Lo tirtzach, don't murder. It doesn't say, Lo tuchal lirtzoach. You're not able to kill. Maybe you are able to kill. That's not the point. The point is you're not allowed. Lo tignov. And therefore, similarly here, it should say, Lo tisaleh. All of these questions are addressed by the Alshech HaKadosh in a most important statement with regards to this mitzvah, and as we will see, all mitzvahs. For a foundation with regards to mitzvahs, what happens when a person fulfills a mitzvah? If we may ask, what is the goal? What is the benefit? What is the tachlis of fulfilling mitzvahs? It says the Alshech, one needs to understand that when you take an object and you fulfill a mitzvah with it, you have changed not only the object, but equally, if not more so, yourself. And the reason why is because the human condition as it begins is with a great disparity between ideals that we may identify with that are part of our discussions and perhaps our lexicon and ideals that are part of our day-to-day living. Not everyone practically embodies even the things that they recognize as being ideals. And things threaten to remain that way, which of course is a terrible situation. And to that end, the Torah gives a program of mitzvahs. It's not just a discussion of ideas, because everyone had the ideas in the first place. That's the easiest thing, is to talk about ideas, and to talk about ethics, and to talk about morals. As long as you're only talking about it, everyone's on board. But when it comes to actually practicing it, so the crowd thins a little bit. And therefore, the Torah says, the 613 mitzvahs, because all of the ideals that you relate to, theoretically, need to become part of your life practically. Or to put it slightly differently, you need to take these concepts from your dictionary and put them into your diary. Not only to relate to them as ideas, but to embody them. For example, tzedakah, the mitzvah of tzedakah, this classic act of kindness. Who benefits? Says the Alshich, the intuition is that the recipient benefits. Beforehand he was destitute, and now he has some more means. But we need to appreciate equally that the giver has benefited. Because until now, charity was a notion that he related to and admired, but he has now become a more generous person as a result of the practical act of giving. Says the Alshich HaKadosh, all of the above is encrypted within the psukim in front of us with regards to Hashavas Aveda. They are describing to us not only the obligation to give back lost property, but also the process of how a person will acquire this trait as part of their personality. Hashavas Aveda probably is a classic example of a mitzvah where everyone relates to the idea behind it. Everyone appreciates it. It's hard, not difficult to explain. It's also not difficult to ignore. In other words, at the very same time that we all realize what a worthwhile thing it is, and the person otherwise it would have been lost to him, and you're giving it back to him, etc. However, as we know, when a person comes across a lost object, and it's just you and the object, and there's other people around, and why is it my problem? It should be their problem, or someone else's. It's very easy to ignore it. And that's really a human quality, the ability to ignore things that we don't wish to see. And everyone's busy, of course. Where will it be lost? It will be lost in a public thoroughfare. And who's in the public thoroughfare? The public. And the public are busy. Everyone's busy. And as we know, being busy and actually having something to do are only casually related. Being busy is a state of mind. It just means that I don't. There's no room for anyone else's business in what I'm doing. And therefore, the Torah begins. It begins at the beginning, because Pasuk Aleph describes a person who appreciates Hashavas Aveda but will never do it. He would never naturally do it. Lo tire eshor achicha oesayoni dachim. Don't see it visalanta mehem. And we raise the question: why does the Torah open it out in this double phraseology? Don't see it and ignore it. It made a point of saying visalanta mehem in the affirmative, because you need to have it affirmed from the Torah that unless something happens, you will ignore it. That's the reality. The same creator of human nature is the one who gave us the Torah. So it's not a secret. You will ignore it unless you train yourself to do otherwise. You will. Do you relate to the idea of Hashavas Aveda? Absolutely. But you'll be busy with it, whatever it may be. You may even be on your way to a conference on ethics. And therefore you don't have time to stop for Hashavas Aveda. And it doesn't exist. And so, the Torah says you will ignore it, so we need to get to work. We need to start a process of chinuch. And it says, Hashev teshivim la'achicha. What's fascinating about the words Hashev teshivim is that they are a well-known grammatical form, this double form, Hashev teshivim. Its official name is the absolute infinitive, Hashev teshivim. But what's also interesting is, if you take the two words Hasev Teshivim and you separate them, so each word now has its own particular nuance. Hashev, bit of basic diktuk, Hashev is the imperative. Hashev is give it back. It's a command form. Teshivim is more descriptive. You will give it back. Now, we do know that the Torah uses a descriptive form even for mitzvahs, of course. When it says, ukeshartam le'osa liyadecha, you will tie them. It's not just merely descriptive, saying something that you will do. It's capital W. You will, because you have to. So the Torah does use the descriptive, but of course there is this difference in nuance between hoshev, the imperative, and teshivim, the descriptive. And what is happening? Says the Alshich, here the Torah is describing the transition between a person acclimatizing to a mindset of Hashavas Aveda. Stage one, he will need to be told. And if he's not commanded, he won't do it. Stage one is Hoshev. But Hoshev, through the course of time, will turn into Teshivim. In other words, what begins as a person being have to be told to do it, will then become part of his nature, part of his makeup, and he will do it. And one could say the ingestion of the idea, the embodiment of the idea, is the transition from the command of Hoshev to the description of Teshivim. And then, the final product, when we look back, is nothing short of staggering. Because the final words of the Pasuk here are, Lo tuchal lehisalem, which transliterally means you are not able to ignore it. That is the end result. And that is the absolute antithesis to how things started. Two psukim ago, you were not able to see it. And through the program of Hoshev turning into Teshivim, you'll reach a point that otherwise could never have happened. Namely, you can't ignore it. You're busy. Things can wait. Someone's lost something. I can't ignore it. That would never happen without the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, and everybody would be left discussing the virtues of Hashavas Aveda. So these are the words of the Alshich, and again through the diyukim of the psukim, these are the dimensions that come out. I would add, as a PS, drawing on my Hasidic roots here, a certain feeling, because there is room to ask. There's 630 mitzvahs. Apparently the process that we described holds true for all of them. And yet the Torah chose to describe it and refer to it within the context of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, of returning lost property. And if we ask, Ma nishtana ha-mitzvah zos, mikol ha-mitzvahs, of all of the mitzvahs, why is this the one that is the example of this concept? And there may be a number of answers, but I have a feeling that it may be connected to an idea that we find in the second parak of Maseches Brachos, after the Amoraim used to finish their Shmona Esrei. So each one would say a different tefillah. We say Elokai Nitzor, that's one of them. And there are others. And Rav Alexandri used to say, Ribono Shel Olam, Galui V'yadu Lefanecha, Sheretzoneinu La'asas Ritzonecha. You know that our will ultimately, really, is to do your will. Umi Ma'akev, so what gets in the way? Because we don't always act that way. Things get in the way. So Or Shebe'isa, the yeast and the dough, which is a reference to the Yetzahara, Shibud Malchios, the climate externally is not always conducive to keeping mitzvos, but really, really, what we would want to do ultimately is return a Torah. So that's very interesting, because when we now say that human nature is not fundamentally in line with the program of Torah until it develops it, that's true for human nature as it has become, as it is corrupted through Se'or Shebe'isa, which makes you selfish, and therefore you don't see somebody else's things. But the principle that the Talmud is revealing to us is that deep down, you really do wish to help the other person. The problem is, these other complicated factors have caused you to lose touch with what your actual will is. The program of mitzvahs thus is more accurately stated as allowing a person to reconnect through mitzvahs with the way that their nature really is, and to overcome the disconnect that has taken place as a result of these other factors of the Yetzer Hara and of the Golus, etc., etc. Or to put it slightly differently, the process of a person reclaiming what is their actual will, having lost it, is actually a process of Hashavas Avedo, of having something that lost to them return to them. And therefore, the entire program of mitzvahs could thus be under the umbrella of Hashavas Avedo, and that's why this aspect of mitzvahs is actually to be found within the mitzvah of Hashavas Avedo. Having mentioned what is potentially a Hasidic thought, I must instantly counter with a Misnagdish story. And it involves actually Rabbi Kiva Eger. And there's a great limud where it is told of Rabbi Kiva Eger, and there's a very similar story about the Beis Halevi, that he came to, he was traveling, he came to a certain inn. As he came to a certain town, he put his things down, and then he, after he'd unpacked, he put on his coat and made to go. So his shamash, who was with him, says, where's the Rebbe going? So he says, there's a certain person in the town, he's a cousin of mine, and mishpacha, I'll pay him a visit. Now this person wasn't known to be particularly of high moral quality. Rebbe Kiva Eger, on the other hand, he is Rabbi Akiva Eger. And the shamash was upset because he felt that it was wrong. In other words, it won't be long before he finds out that you're in town. And therefore, who should go to whom? Wait, and he should come to you. It's not lefich vot harav. Then you should go to him. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, no, that's actually an invalid point. And I have a proof. Where's my proof? Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, the pasuk says with regards to giving back lost property, as we mentioned before, the way that it expresses it ends up using the word v'hisalamta, which means in certain circumstances you can ignore it. When? Zokein ve'einu lefi chvodo. If it's not in keeping with your dignity, you're allowed to ignore it. That's a chiddush of the Torah, because it said v'hisalamta. Even though it said lo tuchalis aleim, but it said v'hisalamta, it gave that proviso. For zokin ve'enu l'fichvoda, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, you know the Novi Yeshaya says about with regards to family, and it's actually the Haftarah of Yom Kippur morning. Umibsarcha al tisalam, don't ignore your family. Umibsarcha al tisalam, and if you look in the pasuk there is no v'salamta, which means, based on the Gemara, there is no exemption when it comes to family for zokin ve'enu l'fichvoda, and that's why your claim is invalid. All it says is Al Tisalam, with no holes, and therefore if it's Mishpacha, off I go. So that's it takes Rabbi Akiva Eger to learn a halacha from something that wasn't said when we put all the pieces together. So this is a classic exposition of Hashavas Avedo, which is to be found in the Al Shech HaKadosh. Now I wanted to move from there and talk about the mitzvah of Kansipur. And that's to be found in Pasuk Vav. We're not going to see all of the mitzvahs in Kiseitzei of that, you can be assured. Pasuk Vav, Ki kare Kansipur lefanecha, when you come upon the bird's nest, baderech, bechol eitz, o ala aretz, efrochim, o beitzim, the young birds or eggs, va'imer vetzes al efrochim, the mother hovers over them. Lo tikach ha'im al habonim, don't take them together. Shaleach tishalach es ha'im, ves habonim tikach lach. This is the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, leman yitav lach baharachta yomim. And great reward is, it's one of the two mitzvahs that the Torah attaches Arichas Yomim to this mitzvah. Now, from a mitzvah point of view, the most basic question that one could ask, and we'll see the answer is not necessarily so simple at all, is what type of mitzvah is this? By that we mean, the Torah said, when you come across the nest, send away the mother and take the eggs. What if you don't want the eggs? That is to say, is there a mitzvah per se to send away the mother bird and take the eggs, even if you weren't actually thinking of taking the eggs, but you have the situation in front of you, and the Torah says, Shaleach to shalach esayim, esabonim tikach lach. Is it an absolute requirement, unconditional? Or is it situational? That is to say, it's predicated on you wanting the eggs. If you want the eggs, make sure to send the mother away first. If you don't want the eggs, so leave the whole thing alone. That's a very interesting shaila. I think most times we would encounter a kansipor, we weren't thinking of eggs prior to that. So, but now you have this situation. Is there a mitzvah to send away the mother bird? To put it into slightly more halachic terminology, this mitzvah, is it a mitzvah chiyuvis, an absolute obligation? Or is it a mitzvah kiyumis, meaning subject to other factors, one can fulfill the mitzvah. This is how to do it if you need to. You wear a four-cornered garment, you need tzitzis. If you don't want, you don't have a chiyuv of tzitzis. If you don't want the eggs, you don't have to send away the mother. And on this matter, we should note, very simple question, opinion is divided. The Chavos Yoyer, one of the great poskim from the Acharonim, Rav Yarachai and Bachrach was his name, the earlier Acharonim, he is of the opinion that indeed it is an absolute obligation. It is unconditional, unqualified. As soon as you have that situation, there's the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen. Why does he say that? Where does he adduce this from? Says the Chavos Yoyer, I'll tell you why. The Talmud, commenting on the opening words, Ki karei kansipor lefanecha, when the bird's nest happens before you. The Talmud in Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, in the end of Chulin, that's where it discusses Shiluach HaKen. And the Talmud explains, or states, Yochol, I may have thought, Yachzor beharim uvagvos, I may have thought that in order to fulfill this mitzvah, it is incumbent upon a person to travel in search of it, and he should climb the mountains and the hills in search of Kansipor. Talmud Lomar, to that end, the Torah says, Ki yikarei. No, you do not need to set out in pursuit of the bird's nest. The mitzvah is only when the nest is in front of you. And that's what we learn from the opening words of this mitzvah, Ki karei kansipor. When you happen upon the bird's nest, says the Chavos Yoyer, I will reason here. If it is true that the entire mitzvah is only subject to you wanting the eggs, how could you possibly think that you would need to set out in pursuit of finding a bird's nest? If you don't wish to take the eggs, there's no mitzvah at all. Even if it's right in front of you. And certainly one wouldn't need to climb a mountain in order to find it. Rather, we see, says the Chavos Yoyer, when the situation arises, it's a must. It's a mitzvah chiyuvis. It's an instant obligation. That's why you may have thought, well, if it's an obligation, then if it's not in front of me, maybe I should set out in pursuit of it. Talmud Lomar, the Torah says, you don't need to pursue it. But if it's there, what do we deduce? If it's there, it's a must. That is the proof of the Chavos Yoyer, and that is why he explains or maintains that Shiluach HaKen is a mitzvah chiyuvis, regardless of whether or not you're interested in taking the eggs. It's a mitzvah per se. Now, on the other hand, or countering the position of the Chavos Yoyer, is the Chasam Sofer. In the Tshuvas and Aruch Chaim Siman Kuf, and the Chasam Sofer brings a number of proofs that in his opinion it is There is no mitzvah unless you want the eggs. And if you don't want the eggs, there's no mitzvah at all. And we're not going to go into the back and forth of his proofs. But one of them, within the context of this shir, is certainly worthy of mention. And that is, says the Chasam Sofer, if you know the reason behind Kansipor, so you will understand why I say there is no mitzvah unless you want the eggs. What is the reason for Kansipor? Says Chasam Sofer. Look around, look in the Ramban, look elsewhere, and you will see that the reason for the sending away the mother bird is as an act of compassion. The mother bird, it's hard for her to see her young being taken. So send her away, and she won't have to see it. Now, before we even proceed to see how the Chasam Sofer then draws his conclusion from that, at this point, we already need to stop. Because we all know that probably the mitzvah which is the most ill-advised to begin to discourse as to what is the reason behind the mitzvah is Kansipur. There is a famous Mishnah which discusses a person who tries to talk about the mitzvah of Kansipur as an act of mercy, and the verdict of the Mishnah is Mishatkinosa. We tell him to be quiet. He's made a grave mistake. He doesn't understand what the mitzvah is about at all. Ha'omer al Kansipur yagira chamecha, a person who says your mercy is extended, he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your mercy is extended to the bird's nest, Mishatkinosa. We tell him to be quiet, as the Gemara explains, Mipnei she'osa midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim, because he's trying to explain HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways as being those of mercy, in his explanation, ve'einon ele gezeros, but they're not that. They're decrees. So we're in a difficult situation. Because here we are embarking on not only a discourse as to what's the reason behind Kansipur, but we may even draw halachic conclusions based on that reason. And this mitzvah, if you'll pardon the expression, is the mother of all mitzvahs, whereby one is not allowed to venture into the reason behind the mitzvah. Says Chasam Sofer, we need to understand that Gemara very well. After all, isn't it true that we can't ignore or deny the fact that we do get involved in reasons for mitzvahs to the extent that we can? What does the Gemara mean when it silences a person who dares to say that Kansipur is about mercy for the mother bird? And by the way, says Chasam Sofer, isn't it obviously mercy about the mother bird? I mean, if you had to say something, wouldn't you say that? And why can't you say it? Whatever happened to Talmi HaMitzvahs? However, says Chasam Sofer, and this is why he made a point of referring us to the Ramban, because the Ramban is the one who has dealt with this issue. What is so wrong with saying your mercy is extended to the mother bird? Says Ramban, Kansipur is about having mercy on the mother bird. For sure. But the person who said that it's about God's mercy for the mother bird has missed the point. He has missed the point of the entire mitzvah. Because the way that he has phrased it, Al-Kansipur Yagira Chamecha, it sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes birds, and the mother bird is in distress, and therefore, what can we do? So he gives you a mitzvah to put the mother bird out of her misery. And we are the agents. But it's really, it's about the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels about the mother bird. And that, says Ramban, is a person who has absolutely missed what the mitzvah is about. The mitzvah isn't about HaKadosh Baruch Hu having rachmonos on the mother bird. The mitzvah is about you having rachmonos on the mother bird. In other words, once again, and I believe this is an important reverberation of our earlier discussion from the Al-Sheikh, the ultimate beneficiary from the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKen is not the mother bird, it's the person who sends it away, because he becomes sensitive. If he's sensitive to the plight of the mother bird, there is room to hope that he may become sensitive to the plight of other human beings, of other mothers, maybe even his own mother. But if it's a direct line from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the mother bird, he's missed the whole point. He could send away the mother bird, and he's done the right thing by the mother bird, but the next person who gets in his way, whether it's his mother or someone else's mother, you'd never know that he just was involved in this act of mercy, because this is not a bird, this is a person, and they're in my way. He's missed the point completely. And therefore, says Ramban, when the Gemara says that this person has made HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways into rachamim, it means that they are express gestures of rachamim towards the bird. That's not true. They're gezeros. They're decrees upon the person to instill within himself the middah of rachamim. But that is undoubtedly what the mitzvah is about. And therefore, says Chasam Sofer, if we take this tam ke'ikar, if we take this understanding of the mitzvah as definitive, it is our working understanding of what the mitzvah is about, certainly we would say, as true as it is, that you're entitled to take the eggs, but the Torah says, but do it in a menschlich way, do it in a compassionate way, send away the mother, she shouldn't have to see. It's roughly analogous to shechita, whereby a person is entitled to take the life of an animal for human consumption, but it should be done in a painless way called shechita. But if a person isn't hungry, so there is no value in performing the mitzvah of shechita per se, because it's a mitzvah, that is to say, sending away the mother bird is the path of lesser resistance, it's the lesser of two evils, and therefore that is the chosen path. Unless you don't need what's at the end of the path, in which case even the path of lesser resistance is incorrect. And therefore, says Chasam Sofer, if we understand that Shiluach HaKen is the most humane way to take the eggs, to minimize the suffering of the mother, but if you don't want the eggs, then any suffering, even minimal, is unwarranted and wrong. And that's why Chasam Sofer, based on that and other reasons, concludes that the mitzvah of Kansipur is actually subject to a person wanting the eggs, as surely as, by analogy, the mitzvah of Shechita is subject to a person wanting meat to eat. Now the question that's outstanding is, what about the proof of the Chavos Yair? After all, the Chavos Yair brought the Gemara, and the Gemara says, I might have thought you need to go trekking up mountains for this mitzvah. How could that possibly be true if you don't even need to do the mitzvah, even if it's in front of you, if you don't want the eggs? So certainly you shouldn't need to go in pursuit of it. So the Mefarshim explain that we need to understand that as true as it is, that had the Torah not said, Ki Karei Kansipor, if it happens right in front of you, you would have thought that it's like other mitzvahs, shaleach to shalach, send away, that you need to pursue it. But when the Torah has ousted that notion by saying, ki karei, it's subject to you meeting it, it has not only disavowed us of the notion that you may need to climb a mountain to fulfill the mitzvah, but it has disavowed us of the entire vision that goes with why you would have thought that. Namely, it's not about the absolute obligation to send away the mother bird at all. As surely as if it happens in front of you, but you don't need to pursue it, the reason why you don't need to pursue it is because it's only if you want the eggs. And therefore the entire paradigm has shifted along with the word ki karei to let us know that it's a mitzvah kiyumis. So it's a very interesting side of the mitzvah of Kansipur. It is the fusion of the most basic of halachic questions with regards to this mitzvah, with a great deal of the machshava that goes behind it. I'd like to move from here to a section later in the parsha, which is in Perek Kaf Dalet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. The mitzvahs at this stage are one after the other. Perek Kaf Dalet Pasuk Tet Zayin. Lo yumsu avos habonim. Father shouldn't die over sons. Ubonim lo yumsu al avos. And sons shouldn't die over fathers. Now, what does this mean? Well, it sounds like it means we would begin with the simplest understanding that this father shouldn't die over the fault of the son, or as a result of the sin of the son. Each one is accountable for themselves. The son shouldn't die over the fault of the father. And indeed, al derech ha-pshat, right, there are Pashtonim, Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, Sephorno, who explain that that's the simple meaning of the pasuk, lo yimzol v'sabonim. No one should suffer over the wrongdoing of somebody else. Now, if that's true, it is a directive to the Bezdin. It's not just a statement. It's a mitzvah, meaning do not kill one over the other. Now, the simple understanding then becomes very difficult. Why? Because our question will be, how could we possibly entertain the notion that you would do such a thing? To the extent that the Torah needs to tell you that you're not allowed to do it, how could we possibly think that that should be the case? What is it that the father could do that we would think that the son should be punished? How could we entertain the notion that the Torah has to say, no, lo yimsu avos habonim? Says the Sforno, generally speaking, we'd never think this way. But there is one infraction that you actually would think this. And from a certain point of view, it makes sense. And it was done. One of the Chiyuvei Misa that a Sanhedrin is entitled to administer or oversee is Moreid B'Malchus, someone who rebels or seditious against the king. Chayev Misa. Moreid B'Malchus. Now, says the Sforno, you should know, and we'll see quite soon, it was the widespread practice at that time that if a person was Moreid B'Malchus, became an enemy of the crown to the extent that they were liable to be killed, their family was killed for a very simple reason. The family, the children of this Moreid B'Malchus, will grow up and be cut. They're just Moreid B'Malchus waiting to happen. They will become a family enemy of the state. And therefore, the entire family was normally wiped out. There should be no reprisals. 20 years down the line, that 6-year-old child, who's then 26 and fully armed and bearing a grudge, so all of that was nipped in the bud. That's how it was put down. And now, says the Torah, you can't do that. Lo yumsu avos habonim. You need to deal with each case as it occurs. This person was Moreid B'Malchus. It's a capital crime. He has children. They will react in whatever way they do. They don't need to suffer as a result of what he did. Not preemptively. Lo yumsu avos habonim. And not bonim al avos. Now thus far, we understand very clearly on al derech ha-pshat that when we say lo yumsu avos habonim, it's one person should not suffer over the wrongdoing of someone else. However, as we will see, there is room to understand that this pasuk means something else entirely. There is a halacha that's quite well known when it comes to edus, testimony. Who is eligible? Everyone's eligible, except there are certain people that are disqualified to testify about others. And the classic example is family members cannot testify about each other. Krovim are pasul eidos. Now, where does this come from? Says the Talmud in Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Kaf Zayin Amud Beis. Comes from this parsha. Comes from this pasuk. Devarim Perek Kaf Dalet. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Why? The Torah says, Lo yumsu avos habonim. Father shouldn't die over its sons. Bonim lo yumsu al avos. What does that mean? Says the Talmud. We know what it looks like it means. It means they shouldn't. One shouldn't suffer over the wrongdoing of the other. But the matter doesn't rest there. Why? Because really what it means is everyone is accountable for themselves. And how does the pasuk conclude? Ish bechet'o yumasu. Each person is accountable for himself. Which means those three words have essentially stated what we a moment ago thought the beginning of the pasuk was saying. The beginning of the pasuk says it in the negative, and here it says it in the positive, but it's the same thing. So once we reach the end of the pasuk, which enunciates very clearly and independently the fact that each person, he suffers for his own wrongdoing, not for someone else. So you're going to have to look back at the beginning of the pasuk and read it again. Because it obviously doesn't mean what you used to think it meant. Because that's the end of the pasuk. And therefore, says the Talmud, when you get to the end of the pasuk and everything you thought the opening is actually to be found in the final three words, so what is the meaning of layumsu avos habonim? Father shouldn't die over sons. It doesn't mean over the wrongdoing of the sons. It means as a result of the testimony of the sons. Ubonim layumsu al avos. That is what the reference is to. Interestingly, because on the one hand we have our pshat, that it's wrongdoings, and there are mefarshim who say that, but we see how the Gemara looked at it very differently. One could say, well, that's drash. That is to say, that's medrash halacha. Medrash always holds the pasuk to a much higher standard than pshat, because pshat is the simple meaning, and medrash is a much more rigorous reading of the pasuk, which often yields different messages entirely, and the two are meant to live side by side. Interestingly, however, if we look at Rashi, on the words layumsu avos habonim, fathers shouldn't die over sons, Rashi says, be'edus bonim, over the testimony of sons. And Rashi explains how he reaches this conclusion. Ve'im tomar ba'avon bonim, perhaps you'll say it means over the wrongdoing of the sons. No, it can't be. Kvar ne'emar ish b'cheto yumasu. The end of the pasuk says that, so that can't be what the beginning of the pasuk is saying. So what we see interestingly here is, I mean, the Gemara, it took the Gemara to say it, as far as Rashi is concerned, that is an absolute valid pshat point. It's a redundancy, and it registers even within the meter of pshat. What is the pasuk says at the end, it obviously isn't saying at the beginning. So it must be something else. And the other pashtonim, who explained that nonetheless, no, it does refer to not dying over the wrongdoings one of the other, is really another expression of the ongoing machlokus as to what is pshat. That is to say, what is the circle of straightforwardness that we call pshat, that within that circle things don't raise flags. For the Rashbam and his school, he's much more, so to speak, allowing for redundancies or whatever, because the simple meaning remains. Whereas for Rashi is more exacting even within the discipline of Pshat. And that's even before we get to Drash. And we've seen this before. It's an ongoing machlokas. Rashi and Rashbam, grandfather and grandson. But Rashi in Parshas Vayetze, commenting on the Malachim, Olim v'yordimbo, on the ladder. Bnei Malachei Elokim Olim v'yordimbo. And of course, the problem is, well, as we know, what goes up must come down, unless you're an angel, in which case it's reversed, because you begin up. So you would say, what goes down must come up. So how can these angels be Olim v'yordim? It should have been Yordim v'olim. And that's why Rashi says, no, it's actually one group of angels went up, and the other one came down. Olim v'yordim. That's Rashi's comment. The Rashbam comments on the words Olim v'yordim bo with a half a sentence and says, Al derech ha-pshat ein ledakdek. If you're looking for the pshat here, there's no problem. Because it means they're going up and down. If you want to be yekish and say that, well, listen, an angel, wouldn't it go down before up? Says the Rashbam, you get the point. You understand what it means, Olim v'yordim. So most things go up and down. So the Torah says Olim v'yordim, and you don't need to stop at this point. But for Rashi, you did. And no one knows Rashi better than the Rashbam. What do you think he learned when he was young? Rashi. He knows Rashi. And he's arguing with Rashi on the question as to what is considered a pshat issue. And similarly here, there is a redundancy, a repetition at the end of the pasuk. Do you need to go back now, al derech ha-pshat, and reread the beginning of the pasuk? Says Rashi, absolutely. Al derech ha-pshat, says Rashbam, not at all. So as far as the halacha is concerned, and for Rashi it's pshat, from here we learn that family members are disqualified to testify one for the other. And it's interesting to ask the question, we may ask, why? And the Rambam discusses this question, and he is of the opinion that there is no reason. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Halacha Tesvav, Zesh Apostle Torah Eidos Hakrovim, that which the Torah disqualified the testimony of family members. Lo Mipnein Shein Becheskas Oavin Zeetze. Perhaps we may have been inclined to say that family, they stick together, they look out for each other, maybe they'll cut corners and say things that aren't exactly true in order to exonerate each other. That would perhaps, it's a suggestion. Says Rambam, it's not because of that, and I'll prove it to you. Shari'enu me'ed lo lolu tovoso for lolu ra'oso, because he's disqualified from giving any type of evidence, not to exonerate him and not to incriminate. So it's an absolute exclusion. Ela gezeirus hakosuv hu. It's a halacha. There's no way to explain it. That's that. And the halachic implications of that, says Rambam, is that even good friends can actually give testimony one for the other. And don't say, oh, well, just like brothers can't, so too good friends can't, because that's not what brothers is about at all. It's a gezeirus hakosuv. The Sefer HaChinuch, however, does give a reason. Unlike the Rambam, which is a little bit unusual. As a matter of course, the Chinuch follows the Rambam in many, many things. But in this matter, the Sefer Chinuch says the reason why the Torah says family members cannot give edus one for the other is because we are afraid they may lie to protect each other. Now, of course, the Chinuch is well aware that family members cannot give any type of testimony, not for good and not for bad. And this is the issue that he addresses now. If that's the reason, then why does the Torah veto any type of testimony, even to incriminate? And the Chinuch gives two terutzim, and each one of them is a chiddush. First, he says the Sefer HaChinuch, it could be that the Torah categorically outlaws family members from giving testimony, any type, even negative. So they should never testify each other and about each other and never come to say even something positive. In other words, according to this explanation, the only worry really is that they'll say something positive about each other. However, as soon as you let him in the stand and he starts with something negative, so you never know that it's difficult sometimes to preserve that distinction. Therefore, the Torah said absolutely to disqualify him. Which is interesting, because this is now a classic example of what we would call lo plug d'oraisa. That is to say, the Torah has disqualified something, even though it's for a certain reason, disqualified it across the board in order to protect the sensitive area. The second reason, I think the Sefer HaChinuch is writing for all sorts of people, says the Chinuch, the reason why a family member cannot testify, not for good and not for bad, is because families come in all shapes and sizes. And there are some family members that, because they're family, they will say good things about each other. And there are other family members who will say bad things about each other, dishonestly, because they're family. In other words, the only constant of family is that things are always interesting. Whether they're positively interesting or negatively, that depends on many, many factors. And therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, don't think that the fact that he's family means that he will only bend the truth in order to get his cousin off the hook. Maybe he doesn't want him to be off the hook, and that's why he took the stand. What we do see is that as far as the halacha is concerned, the way the Gemara has darshaned the pasuk comes to disqualify edus. And this will bring us to our final point for this evening, which is a section of the Novi. It's in Melachim Beis, Perek Yud Dalet, and it discusses one of the kings of Yehuda called Amatziah, and he was the son of HaMelech Yoash, and Yoash was killed by insurgents. And when Amatziah took power, he dealt with them. And the pasuk says, Pasuk Vav. Oh, so Pasuk Hey states, Vayika Shechoska Hamamlocha Biyodo, when Amatsya's kingdom was established, Vayakas Avotov Hamakim Samelech Aviv. He killed those amongst the servants who were involved in the murder of his father. Pasuk Vav. Ves Bnei Hamakim Lohemis. But the sons of those that killed his father, he didn't kill them. Why not? Kakosuv b'sefer Torah Moshe asher tziva Hashem neimor lo yumsu avos al bonim ubonim lo yumsu al avos ki im ish becheto yumas. So this is a most unusual situation. I wonder how many times we have in the Nevi'im and Ksuvim that a pasuk is quoted in the Navi, like it says in the Chumash, lo yumsu avos al bonim. What's fascinating for us is, this is not like the Gemara, because the Gemara told us that by the time it had finished processing and working out the pasuk, lo yum sovas habonim is about testimony. It's not about the faults of the sons for the fathers. But it's the pasuk which says not like that. He didn't kill the sons, as it says, lo yumsu avos habonim. That's unequivocally that it's about the wrongdoings of the fathers, not the testimony one for the other. Says the Radak. And his parish to Melochim there. The Gemara told us, when you look at the end of the Pasuk, Ish Bechato Yumasu, every man for himself, you will then have to reassess the beginning of the Pasuk. That's true. However, says Radak, don't think that what you need to do, and this is such a very delicate point, don't think that what you need to do is to change your understanding, to substitute this new meaning for what you originally thought was the correct meaning. No, the simple meaning of the words can never be displaced. Ein mikra yotze mide pshuto. There's a reason that the Torah wrote it in that way. Lo yumsu avos habonim, when you first meet it, it sounds like it means one family member should not suffer over the wrongdoing of the other. That's what it looks like it means. That's what it does mean. But when the pasuk repeats it at the end, Ish Becheto Yumasu, it's not coming to tell you that the opening of the pasuk doesn't mean what you thought it meant. It means it doesn't only mean what you thought it meant. There's got to be something else. And there is. And it is absolute halacha. And the two live side by side. But the point is that when Amatsya doesn't kill the sons of those that murdered his father, that is a fulfillment of what remains the simple meaning of lo yumsu avos habonim. And the pièce de résistance here comes from the Netziv. Because, says the Netziv, this episode is to be found in Melachim. And it is repeated in Divrei Hayomim. And if you look in Divrei Hayomim, Beis, Perek Kafhei, it says, he killed those that were responsible. He did not kill their children. Kakosuv Batorah, B'sefer Moshe. Lo yumsu avos habonim. That is a very particular way of referring to the Torah. Kakosuv Batorah, B'sefer Moshe. We never have this association of the Torah as Sefer Moshe. It's always called Toras Moshe. As the Novi Malachi says, Zichru Toras Moshe Avdi. That's all over the place. Toras, even on a Moshe, is in the Chumash. But Sefer Moshe, now of course the Torah is the book, and the book is the Torah. What's the difference between them? Says the Netziv, the difference between them is that Toras Moshe is Torah the way Moshe Rabbeinu explained it. Ho'il Moshe Be'er. Sefer Moshe is what's written in the book. And therefore, if you want a classic example of the difference between Sefer Moshe and Toras Moshe as they live together, is that when Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Pasuk, he taught the Pasuk the way the Halacha darshans it, that it's a question of discounting evidence. That's Toras Moshe. Torah Tzivul on a Moshe from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe to the Jewish people. And when Amatsya uses this as his source for not killing the children of those that killed his father, his source is not Toras Moshe. Sefer Moshe. Because it's the simple reading of the words which never goes away even as Torah's Moshe adds on the Medrash Halacha to that. So, as we have seen, again, there's no shortage of halachas in the Parsha, but our eye was on the way that the Torah introduces them, the way the Torah presents them, how it speaks about them, in order to get the added dimensions that come from the attention that we pay to these details. We'll leave it over there for this.